Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and film critic at Robin Hood Radio. He joins us weekly. The films are Mirai, TV, Video Revolutionaries, and At Eternity's Gate. And you know, all I can think of is Heaven's Gate. I'm really sorry, but hi, David. How are you?
I'm okay, Jill. How are you doing this week?
I'm all right. Or maybe Ishtar.
Well, yeah. I have to say, At Eternity's Gate, which we will get to in a few moments, has nothing to do with Heaven's Gate, but you're right, there is a kind of a funny little parallel there, yeah. Well, let us begin, however, with something very different from that, which is the movie Mirai, which is a brand new animation from Mamoru Hosoda, who is a very major Japanese animation director, and this is a Japanese film being shown in some places dubbed into English, some places with English subtitles, but it is very much a Japanese movie. And it is very much in the great tradition of Japanese animation. Japan has evolved what is probably the most important sort of animation subdivision of its film industry of pretty much any country in the world. They've been producing really distinguished animations for many, many years. Of course, Japan also has an enormously important and long-standing industry of producing non-animated movies. But Mirai is a very good example of what Japanese directors at their best can do, and writers and everybody else can do when they're really sort of clicking on all cylinders. Mamoru Hosoda, who directed Mirai, is known, among other things, for movies that deal often with family subjects, and this is a movie which deals very much with family. It's also a movie that could be said to be aimed at kids. It would certainly be appropriate for maybe all but the very youngest kids to go see, but it's a movie which really can appeal to adults as well. We enjoyed it quite a lot. It's a very, very nice film. So the main character of Mirai is not, in fact, Mirai. It is a little boy, and he is around 4 years old at the beginning of the movie. And what happens but his parents have a new baby? He now has a little baby sister, and that is our title character, Mirai. And the thing about our main character of the film, our little boy of the film, he's not an all that well-behaved little boy. He's not bad. He's not a bad kid or anything, but he's always sort of yowling and screeching and not putting away his toys, or putting away his toys and then taking them out again. You know, this sort of thing. So it is not too surprising when he then has a new baby sister that he does get jealous, and he's not awfully happy with attention being taken away from him and given to the new baby, and there are various sort of little conflicts that come into view there. However, one day he is outside, this is pretty early in the film, and he is playing with his dog and playing, just, you know, having a good time with himself in the backyard, when all of a sudden something really mysterious happens. A stranger shows up who claims to be a prince, a young man, and he's dressed in sort of eccentric, sort of bohemian kind of clothes, and they get to talking, and the little boy notices that this mysterious young adult stranger has a tail, and the little boy pulls out the tail from the stranger, pulls right out and sticks it into himself, and turns into his own little dog. And we now realize that this movie is going to have a very strong supernatural dimension, among other things, and the movie goes on from there, and it goes back and forth between the real world and this kind of supernatural world. And what it is really about is our little boy main character coming to terms with the real world around him through going through these sort of fantasy experiences. Now, one thing about the little baby, Mirai, is that she has a birthmark on one of her hands, and that way we can sort of always tell when it's her in the movie, because the movie then starts sort of shifting through time. And we have the Mirai, by the way, her name in Japanese means future. We have the Mirai of the future, and we also have our little boy main character of the future. And sometimes they are in the present when she is a little baby much younger than him, and sometimes they are in the future. And he also meets other characters along the way, including people from his own family at other times not in the present, but in the future. And eventually the movie comes back to the present, and we find that our little boy has in fact grown up and become, you know, not grown up, but he's become a more well-adjusted little boy who has more of a sense of what the real world and what human relations are really like all around him. So it's a very, very nice movie. It's beautifully animated in the Japanese style. Nothing fancy, but it's not too minimal either. And it's just a very, very nicely done movie. Has some very nice music in it. And I really do recommend it. Not everybody is a big fan of animation, but as feature animations go, this is a very nice change from the sort of hyperactive American style. It's a quieter sort of animation. It's a quieter sort of movie. It's a quieter sort of story. But it really does have a lot of surprises along the way, and above all, it just has a very nice mood. It's a nice movie, and we don't get all that many of those nowadays. Turning to our second film from today, Jill, I would like to talk about a documentary. You see how varied our fare is for the day. TVTV, Video Revolutionaries, is a documentary about an outfit which the full name of it, what TVTV stands for, is Top Value Television. And that was sort of a, sarcastic name. Not sarcastic, but had a certain irony to it, because what they were really doing was protesting in their way. They were video revolutionaries, as the subtitle of this film says, about the banality of most television. The head of the Federal Communications Commission, Newton Minow, famously called television of the 50s and 60s era a vast wasteland. And that is pretty much how the TVTV people saw it. And they wanted to bring some excitement to television. They wanted to bring something new and different, and above all, kind of anti-establishment to the television world. So they set to work, and what enabled them to do this and what inspired them to do this in large part was the fact that Sony released the first portable video cassette recorders, what we might now call camcorders. They weren't today's spiffy little camcorder jobs that do everything digitally. They were much more bulky than that. They were called portapacks, these early Sony portable cameras. But they were a whole lot less bulky and unwieldy than what was used for commercial television, for network television, and for all television, the great big, huge, old TV cameras that were used, and that were pretty much the only things around until you got into the 1960s. And then we have cinema verite coming along because of these portable video cameras and sound equipment packages that were developed. And so TVTV took these new devices and went out into the world. They were guerrilla video makers. They were the opposite of network video. Unlike the big three networks and the channels associated with the big three networks, they were able to go out into the world and do anything they wanted with their little portable cameras and sound setups. And that's what the TVTV people did was. And they went out and they got footage of all kinds of stuff, which they then had to work very hard to somehow get on the air through one of the established outfits that puts things out on the air, because this is, of course, long before the age of cable television. They were active back in the 1970s, by the way, from 1972 until they finally disbanded in 1977. And they did all kinds of things, and we see little clips from all kinds of activities that they did in this movie. For example, they went to the 1972 Republican political convention, and they got all kinds of things there. You will see how they had to sort of worm their way in alongside the big guys, alongside the broadcast news, network news, broadcast news people from the big channels and the big networks. They had to sort of sneak around and somehow get a hold of credentials and somehow get along in there. And one of the things that we see in the film is a broadcast news correspondent not even willing to speak to a TVTV reporter. They were regarded as so low on the food chain. There's also from that 1972 Republican convention, when TVTV was fairly new, we see Ron Kovic protesting the Vietnam War. And that's a scene that occurred in Oliver Stone's movie about Ron Kovic, Born on the 4th of July. There's a bit with Hunter S. Thompson, the famous guerrilla journalist of another type. who does all kinds of his outrageous things, like pour vodka into a grapefruit and drink it for breakfast. And there's stuff that they managed to shoot at the White House and so forth. So all kinds of stuff like this, all shot by TVTV back in its golden era of the early to middle 1970s. The movie, the documentary, TVTV Video Revolutionaries, is directed by one of the TVTV members who's still around, Paul Goldsmith. And we see him and various others from that organization. They were a small, tightly knit band. We see them all in the course of the film. It's a very entertaining documentary. It brings up a part of television history, a part of video history that has been pretty much forgotten. I remember that they were around in the early to mid 70s, but I didn't plug very strongly into their work. But it's fascinating. The movie is also a kind of a time capsule getting back to that period. If you remember the early 70s, or if you were not even around then, but have heard about the early 70s, this movie gives you a glimpse by a very sort of a 60s-ish and 70-ish kind of activity, revolutionary video, guerrilla video, an entertaining, interesting, and very snappy, fast-moving documentary. So our final movie for today brings us to another kind of visual art, and it's very, very different, again, At Eternity's Gate. I must say that's a very pretentious title, but hey, there it is, and it's maybe one of the worst things about the movie, which is a very good movie and certainly a very beautiful movie to look at. It was directed by Julian Schnabel, who has made films before now, just a few of them. The best known is probably The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, about a man who becomes, based on the true story of a man who becomes totally paralyzed. Julian Schnabel is also a very major American painter. And in this film, he brings his love of filmmaking together with his love and his career in painting, because this is a biopic, a biographical portrait of Vincent van Gogh. Now, this is not the first Vincent van Gogh biopic that has come along. Many, many years ago, for example, Vincent Minnelli made Lust for Life, starring Kirk Douglas. The very great Japanese filmmaker Akira Kurosawa made a movie called Dreams, one segment of which is a biopic of Vincent van Gogh, starring Martin Scorsese, the movie director, playing Vincent van Gogh. Robert Altman made a very interesting American movie called Vincent and Theo, about the relationship between Vincent van Gogh and his brother Theo, who was his dealer, who dealt in his art, a difficult task because Vincent van Gogh famously sold virtually nothing during his entire lifetime. But now we have another biopic of Vincent van Gogh, and it's certainly one of the better ones, if not the very best. It stars Willem Dafoe. Now, Willem Dafoe, this has been called an all-time career great performance by Willem Dafoe, and I have to say, it really is a spectacular performance. I happen to have known Willem for a lot of years. I'm very familiar with his work for many years with the Experimental Theater Group in New York, the Wooster Group. He has a very multifaceted talent, and he can do the experimental stuff at least as brilliantly as he does the regular movie stuff. But he has had a very long and illustrious career in regular commercial films. And he is just a spectacular Vincent van Gogh. If you have seen the other Vincent van Gogh biopics, or if you felt, oh, I'm not that interested in Vincent van Gogh, see this movie just for Willem Dafoe's performance. It is absolutely spectacular. It's a deeply felt performance that is full of little surprises and yet always keeps you very much immersed in this character. A wonderful, wonderful performance. Supporting him are Rupert Friend as the brother Theo van Gogh, who is Vincent van Gogh's art dealer. The wonderful Oscar Isaac, not particularly distinguished in this movie, but he's a terrific actor. He plays van Gogh's great friend, Paul Gauguin, another great painter, of course. Also, a couple of very illustrious French actors, Mathieu Amalric, Emmanuel Seignier, play smaller roles in the movie. And I also want to mention another film from last year, Loving Vincent, which was an animated biopic of Vincent van Gogh, because although At Eternity's Gate is very much a live-action film, again, with this wonderful performance by Willem Dafoe, it resembles last year's animated film, Loving Vincent, in that it is above all else a spectacular visual experience. Last year, the animation Loving Vincent, not a great movie as biography, but just stunning to look at. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful animation. And At Eternity's Gate, very much a live-action film, was photographed by the fine French cinematographer Benoît Delhomme, and it just looks wonderful. It has the impressionist and post-impressionist feel that Van Gogh's own paintings give, and Gauguin's and so forth. It has that without being an imitation of that. It is just a visual feast to look at from beginning to end. It's a well-written movie. One of the writers was Jean-Claude Carrier, one of the world's great screenwriters. He's worked with the likes of Jean-Luc Godard and Louis Buñuel and many others over the years. So we have here a coming together of a whole lot of really excellent talent. We have Carrière as a writer. We have, perhaps above all, Julian Schnabel, who does a very, very fine job directing the movie. Benoît Delhomme, the wonderful cinematographer who gives it a superb visual sheen. And we have a wonderful cast headed, above all, by Willem Dafoe. So it's a movie, if you love painting, if you love art, if you just want to see a spectacular-looking movie that will just fill your eyes every single moment, I really do recommend At Eternity's Gate. It's not a great film, but it's one of the very best biographies of an artist to ever grace the silver screen, I think, and I do recommend it. And so that is my somewhat variegated story this week, Joe.
I would say very variegated. Thank you very much. David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Mirai, TV, Video Revolutionaries, and At Eternity's Gate.